This is episode 25, titled Sustainability with Bumblebee Seafoods, with Renee, the VP of Corporate Brand Strategy and Communication at Bumblebee Seafoods. This podcast is sponsored by Sanders Tech Ed Foundation. This is Samantha Richter, COO of the Agua Hedionda Lagoon Foundation, AHLF, for short. Nature all around me invites persons of all ages and backgrounds to ground themselves in the environment that the Agua Hedionda Lagoon provides through experiential learning. Today, we welcome Renee. Renee is a Carlsbad resident and joined the AHLF board in 2021. Renee serves as the Vice President, Corporate Brand Strategy and Communication at the Bumblebee Seafood Company, a role she has held since 2019. With a love for the planet and as a believer in businesses that operate as a force for good in the world, Renee has spent her career at organizations that share her values, including Jamba Juice, Sam Bozen, the Coca-Cola Company, and now the Bumblebee Seafood Company. In her current role, Renee has been instrumental in driving forward Bumblebee's seafood future, commitments to sustainability and social responsibility. Renee, thank you for joining us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself, history and passion for sustainability.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Samantha. Thank you for the opportunity to let me do this. It's always fun to talk about sustainability. Well, a little bit about myself. I've been in California since 2000, and I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia. I came out to California as a part of a move with the Coca-Cola Company, where I worked for over 12 years. And I came to California, I remember my father saying this to me, that California is not a state, but a state of mind. And my state of mind has always been incredibly oriented towards the outdoors and towards nature and towards, ironically, having grown up in a landlocked town, towards water. I guess I'm an Aquarius, so maybe that's why. I have always felt the need to be, for whatever reason, in California. And the question about sustainability is an interesting one. People ask me this, and I've started thinking about why have I had this kind of gravitational pull towards things oriented around sustainability, sustainable living. And when I reflect on that, I think about how I was raised. I was raised in Atlanta, Georgia, which was not the hotbed of sustainable thinking. But my parents were the original hippies, right? But they were part of that original hippie group. Every summer from the time that I was maybe 9 years old, I would go up to Vermont to a camp called Farm and Wilderness, where we just for the most part, lived in the wilderness for 2 months. I mean, we lived in three-sided cabins, but we didn't have electricity in the cabins. We farmed, we raised animals, we spent a lot of time in the water. We went on 5 to 7 day hikes. That was so foundational for me, really getting connected to nature. And then the other side of that, which is the other side of my career, was really in food. My parents were very into natural food. They were one of the original, so I was eating tofu at a very young age and kefir, and we were making our own peanut butter and making our own yogurt. So I was really raised in this idea of eating from the earth and being really close to nature. And I think that's really what has driven my love for sustainability, especially as I see how poorly we're treating the earth and how quickly the things that I love are going away. So that's my path to sustainability.
Well, thank you for the in-depth and honest response. And I think it brings and hones in with so much what we do or are striving to do at the foundation, and thinking on my past experiences as well, is how I and many people, I believe, get into the environment because of their upbringing and because of their experiences and the allowable experiences in their environment. And everything we try to do at the Lagoon Foundation, and no, we're not landlocked and we've got the ocean in the back and you can drive 2 hours and see snow and Big Bear Mountain and the San Bernardino Mountains. California is unique for that, especially Southern California. But providing the access to nature so that it can be stewarded and sustainable into the future, and providing that just sense of spark and everything that you mentioned growing up, is exactly what we're trying to do here. So thank you.
That's great.
My next question is, tell us a little bit about Bumblebee Seafood Company, brand, mission, vision, anything that you would like to share.
So the Bumblebee Seafood Company, interestingly, it was actually started in Astoria, Oregon, and it was started as part of a group called the Columbia River Packers. They were one of the original packing, you know, tuna packing companies, and eventually it moved down to San Diego. But the original idea behind packing seafood, kind of starting with sardines in the U.S. and eventually moving to tuna and albacore tuna, was that tuna is and seafood is such a high source of protein. And for the longest time, only people on coastal waters were able to access seafood and the nutritious benefits, the delicious nutritious benefits of seafood. And so when it became canned, it really created kind of access to many people. Many people were able to have access to the high protein and high omegas, et cetera, of seafood. And so I bring that up because that's really the foundation for our purpose. And our purpose, which we've just kind of codified in one sentence, which is feeding people's lives through the power of the ocean. Our purpose really started with the idea of feeding people, you know, really, really nutritious, really delicious food. And then through the power of the ocean. We have three ways that we bring that to life, which is through our people strategies, our product strategies, and our planet strategies, which is that's the seafood future program that you spoke about, or kind of mantra that you spoke about earlier. So that's a little bit of the history of very short condensed history and of our purpose and where we started.
Is Bumblebee Seafood a San Diego corporate location?
So Bumblebee Seafood is located in San Diego. We have a production facility in Santa Fe Springs, close to LA. We also have we produce clams out of Cape May in New Jersey. And then we have operations in Canada, Black Harbor, where we produce sardines as well.
An accomplishment we briefly touched on in your bio was Bumblebee's Seafood's Future, which you kind of just went back to as well. Can you tell us about the commitments to sustainability and what sort of goals or progresses are made being towards these initiatives?
Of course. So when we think about our purpose, which is, you know, as I said before, feeding people's lives through the power of the ocean, we're really clear that you can't feed people. Right now, over 3 billion people on Earth today rely on seafood as their primary source of protein. You can't do that, continue to do that, if you don't treat the ocean, don't nurture the ocean, treat it well, and ensure that it can be a regenerative source. So that's kind of the basis of what Seafood Future was about, which is you have to nurture and protect the ocean in order to, frankly, stay in business and continue to feed this growing population. The Seafood Future Report was started we put it together in 2020, but it was really taking all the work that we'd done up until 2020 and then putting it into kind of a structure and a format that we could measure ourselves, and then also added on some aggressive goals for the future. And so we've divided the Seafood Future platform into three primary areas, which is fish, sustainably sourcing fish, ocean, which is ensuring for us specifically, ensuring that we're helping regenerate the ocean, that we are reducing plastic going into the ocean, whether that's through ghost gear or our packaging, finding ways to reduce that. And then lastly, people, to make sure that we're taking care of our people and that we're supporting the communities in which we live. And the specific commitments for each one of those, I can outline a few of them. There are quite a few, but specifically against fish, our commitment is to have by 2025, all of our fish either MSC certified, which means Marine Stewardship Council certified. That means that stocks are being managed, that the bycatch is hitting a certain, that we have low bycatch, that we're purchasing from boats that treat their fishermen well. And there are a series of, I want to say there are 56 criteria that we have to meet in order to get Marine Steward MSC certified or in a FIP, which is kind of in progress to get to MSC certified. So that means all the species that we sell from sardine to salmon to tuna will be certified sustainable. So that's one. The second is ocean, right now, all of our packaging, our consumer-facing packaging, is 96% readily recyclable. We've just made the decision to get rid of our shrink wrap, which is the plastic that goes around one of our multi-packs, and move that to a readily recyclable cardboard, which gets us to 98%. So we're close to 100% readily recyclable products, so to avoid getting plastic into the ocean. So we've outlined all of those objectives, and we're making aggressive progress against those objectives.
Thank you. I have a question from that. Is Seafood Future, is that a Bumblebee Seafood Company specific term, or is that across all seafood companies?
It's Bumblebee specific.
Okay. Do you see trends just like you mentioned, all those goals, initiatives, more recycling, less plastic across the corporate world.
Yeah.
You know, you hear about it, but you're living it.
Yeah, what's really fascinating, and it's actually happened in the past, what I've seen is it accelerate at a meteoric pace in the past 2 years. And I think one of the big drivers for that, actually there are two. One was corporate finance, to be really frank, and the second was consumer. From a corporate finance perspective, in 2020, Larry Fink of BlackRock, which is an investment group, he wrote a letter to all CEOs about the importance of addressing climate change and how companies have to be able to, they have to start putting risk around climate change into their portfolio. And he also stated that they were going to start divesting from companies that had high risk climate change components to it. So if you were building in, for example, if you're a real estate company and you're building along the coast in Miami, there's going to be sea level rise and those buildings will get impacted. Those are things that they would divest. And as soon as that happened, and I don't know if this is exactly the turning point, but it's what I've seen as the turning point. Once there's a connection between financial impact and climate change impact, once those two things got connected, you began to see almost every company hold themselves, every large company begin to hold themselves accountable to specific ESG metrics. And now many companies, not only do they have to do their standard end of year reporting and reporting to shareholders, but they're having to include into their reports information around what they're doing with CO2 emissions, what they're doing with animal rights, what they're doing with human rights. I mean, there's a level of demand for transparency around components related to ESG that I've never seen before. And that's happened over the past 2 years. So that's been a massive driver. And every single company that we deal with, that we sell to, is aggressively pursuing ESG metrics, from Walmart to Costco to Kroger. They're asking questions around how much plastic is in your packaging. What are your CO2 commitments? What are your human rights commitments? So we're feeling it. All manufacturers are feeling it. And I think it's great. The second driver are consumers. And what you're seeing, especially again over the past, and this could just be transparency of information because of social media, but what you're seeing is that consumers, there's a high correlation between consumers' trust in a company and how the company treats their people, treats the planet, treats animals. And if there's any sense that a company is not doing the right thing, not treating people fairly, the trust levels go down and you'll almost immediately see sales go down. And conversely, if there's a high level of trust, there's a high level of loyalty and a high level of purchase. So I would say consumer and finance, those are going hand in hand. And in the past 2 to 3 years, it's been significant, the change.
Thank you. I just want to compliment the way that you explain it. It's very humble and easy to understand, and it's a very complicated, I would say, subject matter. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And on that, I guess, just because you mentioned the Kroger and the Costco, and you know, everyone intersects business to business, business to consumer, B2B, right? Would you say that's a similar situation in countries outside of the United States, right? Because we all have so many different laws and regulations, and like you said, ESG performances, that does that translate? Or it's at least starting to translate B2B in San Diego or you know, maybe California. Is it translating elsewhere?
I'll just tell you what I see. Europe is very advanced. The European countries seem to be much more aggressive in what they're demanding of companies. And I think some of that, again, is driven by business. But a lot in Europe, you hear a lot more about packaging issues, plastic issues. You hear there are a lot more searches, you know, on Google, a lot more interest in plant-based or veganism, et cetera. So what I see is Europe is pretty aggressive. But other countries are different, right? They're in kind of different situations. So it's a little bit geography by geography. You're definitely seeing everyone aware of the interconnectivity of the planet, right? If the Amazon rainforest gets cut down and the Amazon's considered the lungs of the earth, and one out of every five breaths you take come from the Amazon, everybody should be concerned about that, right? I think that's where you're beginning to see it happen. It's not at the same pace in every country or every region.
One last question, and I guess from the corporate structure and sustainability initiatives you may have mentioned, do you have any advice or trends that may be implemented for the everyday person related to deploying personal sustainability goals?
Yeah, I would say that this is true for both business and people. There's this idea of a materiality assessment, which is like, what do you do when you do a materiality assessment in your business? You're looking at things that are most important to your specific business. Like, it wouldn't make sense for the Bumblebee Seafood Company to be trying to figure out how to do regenerative agriculture, which is about how do you regenerate the earth to grow grains, et cetera. But what is really important to us is how do we make sure we protect the ocean? So you have to understand, where do you have your company or your personal, your greatest impact? Mm-hmm. So from a personal perspective, if you are really worried about the earth and you decide, I'm really worried about CO2 emissions, or I'm really worried about plastics in the ocean, you just make those changes. For example, with plastics, you just use less plastic. You use less single-use plastic. You reuse bottles. I mean, there are simple things to do. And then you make small changes one after another. The main point there is you have to decide, think about your kind of universe that you live in, the ecosystem that you live in, and then pick the things that are kind of easiest to do for your first step. The thing that I encourage companies and people to do is, you know, progress, not perfection. It's that saying. You don't have to do everything. Just pick one thing, and then you move to the next thing, and then you move to the next thing. As individuals, the things you could probably do most is, you know, if you're a heavy meat eater, probably eat a little bit less meat. Agricultural farming does to the earth is pretty significant. And, you know, reduce your use of plastic, reduce your use of water. But those are easy things to do. But don't tackle it all. Just pick one thing, go after it, and pick the next thing, go after it, and make progress, not perfection.
Great advice. And of our small team here at the Lagoon Foundation of about 7 or 8, we have 2 vegans and 2 vegetarians. And it's more common, and it's, you know, simple steps, things to do. And I think I'm going to have to get like a vegan food blogger or something on the podcast to talk about next steps. So thank you so much. That was very educational, informative, I would say passionate and inspiring. I think it's hard for a lot of people to get behind the doom and gloom that you see that the Amazon is falling and all the plastic in the ocean. But the only way to change it is to make those small changes. And that's what we do here at the Lagoon. And it's as simple as using your water bottle if that's the one change you can make at this time. So anyway, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Samantha. I appreciate it.
To our listeners, catch us next time. As always, you can find this episode where you find all your major podcasts.
If you're looking to start a podcast on your own, use the coupon code WHATHAS at checkout and receive a free month of media hosting from our recommended hosting company, Libsyn.com. That's Libsyn.com. This podcast was produced by Imagine Podcasting, and we help businesses eliminate competition by elevating their brand message to be heard. Visit ImaginePodcasting.com for more information.